So, Thomas Ross Parry.
Yeah, Matthew Stephen Boyle.
1 year ago today, did you think that we would have reached 1 year of Tom and Matt Attack?
Of course, Matthew. I'd every faith in us, didn't you?
Tom and Matt Attack. Yes, we are 1 year old. Hooray. Huzzah.
How about that? How many podcasts is that?
49?
Are you sure about that? You're going to have to double check your facts. You weren't prepared.
I wasn't.
You
hit me with it right out of the gate.
Throw that at you.
Both of us are typing away. Both of us have laptops.
That's because we're like techies.
We are. It's because we've been researching for you wonderful people to keep up the quality of programming.
Actually, there's 48. This is the 49th, yeah.
This is the 49th, so yeah. That's right. What I was saying. Yeah, I was right. Yay, give the man a prize.
Wouldn't it be better if it was 50?
It would have
really,
been better
one
if
year,
it was 50.
Let's say 1 year, nearly 50 podcasts.
Theoretically, though, this is the 50th because I travelled to Copenhagen on Tuesday to record a podcast with the wonderful people at Nap Knock Games.
So this will be the 50th?
Theoretically speaking, yes. Like, the one before this is the 49th.
Okay.
But we're releasing it after this because I thought it'd be nice to do the 1 year special with you. With you, Parry.
Oh.
See?
Yeah.
So
This is the special, right. Cool.
Yes, it is. We do have a prize to give away for this. The wonderful folks over at Games World Bod have given us a tea from Pixel Pixel.
Games
World
Bodmin.
Yes, please go check out Adam at Games World Bodmin and buy some stuff from there.
Why not? He ships all over.
He does. He ships to Denmark. He keeps me and Tom in Retro Gaming Delights, which is always very, very nice. We'll be launching a bit of a contest to celebrate this whole 1 year thing in the week. I want to add some more cool prizes to it, so I shall keep it very hush-hush until that point. But yeah, get excited. 1 year of Tom and Matt Attack has happened. This is it. This is the new millennium of Tom and Matt Attack. I guess we should savour this moment of being 1 year old by starting the way we always do. How's your week been, Thomas?
Let's not change things. My week's been all right, thanks, Matt. I was a bit ill earlier in the week, though.
You were.
I was a bit ill.
I felt a bit bad. I was jet-setting off to Copenhagen, and you were on the couch dying.
Yes, and it only got worse, but I did manage to play a couple of games.
You did, really?
I wasn't going to play anything that was too full-on, though.
Okay.
And it was only the morning I managed to... Actually, no, I did play something later on. But I'll talk about what I played, first of all, on my terrible sick day. I had to go on Nier.
Nier.
On the Xbox 360.
Square Enix developed by, and not played.
Caviar, I think, or Caviar is the name of the developer.
Yeah.
I'm pretty certain they did Bullet Witch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, judging by the quality of Bullet Witch, I probably wouldn't have bought this game, so I didn't know that. How is it?
Do you know what? It's rather unique. At first, I thought the combat was a bit clunky.
Okay.
But then I was drawn into the situation, which... It's quite slow to start, actually, once you get past the initial introduction sequence. And basically, you're a guy who's got this really ill daughter.
Yeah.
Okay, and your goal is just to look after her, basically. And you're in this village, and it's quite picturesque, actually. The landscapes feel a little bare, but the atmosphere is very nice, the lighting and such, and you start... going about your everyday business, which is going to the library to see a friend who asks you to do little tasks and such.
Okay.
So, as I say, quite sedate, you go off into the next field, which is a little bit dangerous because there's these creatures which are appearing.
Yes.
And you have to go and get some mutton. So at first I was like, where am I going to get the mutton? And he says, straight away, load of sheep. So you just go hacking at some sheep.
How dare you? How very dare you?
You just hack at a few sheep until it tells you got enough mutton, then you head back to her. And...
Did you get your mutton for nothing?
Yeah, and which gives you a bit of money, you see. Oh, that's how you earn your living. You're just trying to do the best for your daughter and do the few odd jobs. And then she advises you, go back to your house and see your daughter, and you do. Next day, you wake up, go to the library, do the same thing. This time she asks you to get rid of a few monsters which have appeared in the fields. And so you fight them. You go back, you get your money, you go to the shops, pick up a few things, go back to see your daughter. And that's all I played of it. But I think it's going to be quite interesting, actually.
Sounds like a JRPG.
It sounds like a JRPG. But it has a beautiful soundtrack, actually, with vocals.
Yeah.
As you travel through the into the big field and such, it's really great music. And it's all action. It's action RPG, so there aren't any turn-based
Yeah, this is
fights.
Why I wanted to pick it up.
The combat feels a little bit stilted. And at the beginning of the game, before you get into the main game, the prologue, you can use all these crazy powers which are given you to you by this magic book.
Oh no, does it do that whole thing of like...
And then it takes all your powers away from you.
I hate that. And despise that. I remember playing Symphony of the Night and being Alucard and just running up to the castle and just kicking everything's ass and just be like, wow, I feel like a superhero.
Yeah, you get really, really strong really quickly and leveling up like nothing. And you're like, wow, this is really cool. And then everything's gone.
Of course.
And the whole atmosphere of the game changes. It feels at the beginning like it's set in a modern day or even a futuristic age. And then it says 1,000 years later. You're still alive, but you're totally in like a medieval kind of garb. And you.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by the game.
I'm sure there'll
be an
interesting
plot behind
it. That's why I picked it up.
I picked it up to play it because I thought it was really intriguing.
Yeah. Redeem their name, I guess. Kavir Games have made a whole host of games. Amongst them, they generally made things like Dragon Ball Z games, Dragon Ball Z Super Sonic
Not
Warriors.
Bullet Witch, was I wrong?
They did make Bullet Witch. However, they also made Drakengard.
I've got a beef with Bullet Witch. I think it's pretty all right.
Pretty subpar from what I remember.
It's not,
right?
Not amazing, but it's...
Actually, we can't discuss this developer any further without their greatness being told. They made the Sega Bass Fishing port for the Wii U. For the Wii, sorry, not the Wii U.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. They handled that okay.
They did. Weird thing, Dragon Guard 3, which I'm very excited about. I've actually pre-ordered from Square. No, they're not. It's a company called Access Games.
Okay.
And published by Square. And Access Games have worked on Ace Combat, Deadly Premonition. They did...
They're the studio behind Deadly Premonition.
Yeah. Oh, actually, they developed Tomba and Tomba 2 as well, apparently.
So they have
worked with Square for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm interested. I'm looking forward to Dragon Guard 3. I only played the first one, but I liked it.
Yeah. I will go back to Nier. I think I will, but I just don't want it to be really long. That would really... If I knew it was, like, really, really long, I probably wouldn't go back to it. Because I don't think I could sink that much time into it. But I'm guessing it being an RPG, it is long.
Well, how long to be. I love this having a laptop. It's a wealth of 19 hours.
19. Oh, that's all right, isn't it?
That's pretty reasonable, I'd say.
That's not bad.
But again, apparently, like only FF10 has got 25 hours. So, you know, I guess it's all right for a JRPG. It's not one of these ever-expanding things. It doesn't outstay its welcome, I assume.
Cool.
What else have you been playing then on your sick day?
While I was sick, I also spent some money and I bought the Devil May Cry HD collection.
Oh, really?
On the Xbox, which was on offer. It was £6 something. And this was actually, I think I mentioned, did I mention it on the show last week? I can't remember. Because we were talking about Final Fantasy X HD remake. We were saying, oh, how nice it looks, all the textures. And I thought, oh, Devil May Cry, that's going to look lovely.
I'm sure you mentioned it, yeah.
Yeah.
Does it?
Yes, it does for the most part. I thought it looks at least better than the PS2 game.
Yeah.
It's sharper, the textures are more prominent. Okay, you know, you can see a lot more detail. It's not as nice looking of a game as Final Fantasy X.
No.
And you pointed out it was an earlier title for the
PS2. Yes, it was a launch title for the PS2.
So, of course, Final Fantasy X was going to be the better looking game out of the two.
And, you know, I would genuinely argue that for all their faults, Squaresoft, or as they now become Square Enix, do make very, very good-looking games.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of some of the problems they have in the later Final Fantasy games.
And Devil May Cry is by no means ugly.
It isn't.
But yeah, it was cool having a go on that again. It definitely feels like an old game now.
It does.
It's quite fun.
Well, I guess playing it and just being able to point out all the Resident Evil tropes that they've nicked and put into that game.
But what is incredibly refreshing about it is when the combat kicks in, And it's like, Jesus Christ, I feel cool.
Yeah.
There's something about the combat in Devil May Cry, which is just so... I can't think of another word, but cool.
Yeah, I remember I was... God, how old would I have been when the PS2 came out? Because I remember going over my mate Daniel's to play Devil May Cry because he was like, you've got to come see this game because he got one at launch. I must have been, I don't know, I was in comprehensive school, so I must have been about 12, 13. And I remember Dante being the coolest character ever. Yeah,
everyone thought he was...
Oh my God, he's such a douchebag. That introduction to Devil May Cry is like the worst introduction to any game in the world. Oh, it's awful. It's so cringy.
You don't think he's cool anymore? I still think he's cool.
No, but I guess Devil May Cry 4 has kind of tarnished my view of Dante, where he's doing all this hyper cheesy anime stuff where he's like throwing a rose and spelling his name through bullets
he's
and stuff.
A parody of himself.
He has become a parody of himself, unfortunately.
Mm.
But how far did you get in it? Do
you
play
saw
very
you
far?
Were there.
I know, but I mean, for the listener, Tom, I mean, gauging
not very
the listener.
Far. I got some orbs.
Yes.
And I just had a quick go. To be honest, not very far at all. I remember having played it previously on the PS2. I got up to a spider.
Yeah.
Kind of molten lava spider, which isn't very far into the game at all. But maybe now I'll have the incentive to play it a bit more.
It does have very cool boss fights from what I remember. I remember those being the most memorable bits of the game. Hmm. I really like 2. Not
yeah,
a lot of people
this,
seem
yeah.
to. But there's a very cool vibe in 2 where you're just kind of walking around and there's all these kind of like demon electronic things like tanks possessed by demons and stuff, and it's kind of got a vibe for me of the 1980s Transformers animated movie when like Autobot City's all destroyed because the city you're in is all kind of like crumbling and it's very run and gun, so it kind of brought back some nostalgia for that for
I was
me.
Getting the impression it might be a big game because there was 2 discs if I remember there
it was
two
because there were
characters.
2 characters and one character was on one disc and Dante was on the other. It was a girl I can't remember
girl,
the name
right.
of
There's plenty. I imagine there's plenty of gameplay there. 3 titles. I've played all 3 previously. I thought Devil May Cry 3 was great, but particularly difficult. From
I
my
never
experience
played 3. Isn't it like a prequel?
You're younger. Yeah, younger.
Yeah, you can
Dante.
Play as Alistair and, as well, isn't it? The Dark Knight Alistair. Guy. Isn't that his name? Like,
there's Virgil.
Virgil, that's him.
That's
yeah.
It, yeah. Dante's adversary, Virgil. Yes. Is his brother? You know, I'm not so...
Stop spoiling things. Oh, yes, he is.
I'm sure
it's,
most...
It's, I guess so. In all fairness, it's a 15-year-old game.
Yeah. You could play as him in the special edition of Devil May Cry.
Which I assume is probably in the HD collection.
I hope it is. Imagine if it isn't.
It's probably DLC. It's Capcom.
Yeah, perhaps. So I moved on to another action game after that. And it's a game I mentioned maybe in a few weeks ago that I said I'd ordered, and that was Yaiba Ninja Gaiden Z.
Yes, you have been waiting for this for an awful long time.
Or Z, I should say Z, really. I guess Z's really outside of the UK.
Yes.
Everyone would know it as Z. So that had some terrible reviews.
Yes, I saw Polygon give it a 3. Mm.
Okay, my first impressions of the game, because again, I didn't play it for very long. I was ill. I couldn't take a lot of it, you know.
Yeah,
of gaming.
Excuses.
Especially not the fast-paced stuff, you know. I really had no desire to. I think the evening I was really ill, we ended up watching Fantasia, didn't we?
We did,
and that, now that's an all right way to spend an evening when you've been sick. But it was beautiful to look at, I thought, straight away. And I thought, gee, I've not seen cel shading done this well ever, perhaps. This was very nice, very comic book feel.
Wind Waker, continue.
Oh, okay, well, Wind Waker is a bit of a different beast. This feels like a comic book. This is shell shading to give the impression of a comic book. And it was, the colours were great, vivid. The animation was incredibly smooth.
Yeah.
It looked like developers had taken a lot of time and put a lot of effort into it. The gameplay was very simplistic.
Yeah, it seems like a very simplistic game, but it does. As
but
you
enjoyable.
Say,
My worry is it will become monotonous as a game goes on. But then again, I am someone who nearly played Deadpool to the end.
Which I also agree with you isn't as bad as everyone made it out to be.
But criticism of Deadpool would that some people found that game monotonous to play. I didn't. I felt that there was enough variety in the combat and enough humour to keep it going. My hope is with Yaiba that there will be a good amount of humour, which of what I've seen so far appealed to me. The game has also been criticized for its crude humor. But this seems to be a trend with reviewers online. Shadow of the Damned got it. Killer's Dead got slated for its humor, and so did Deadpool. So,
yeah, looking at it now, I can't see why. Because every review I've read of it has said, like, oh, it goes on and on and on. It's got, like, main story in howlongtobeat.com is 5.5 hours.
Okay.
I've played terrible games, Metal Gear Rising, for longer than 5 hours.
Oh, that, I wonder if that's controversial.
Well, the,
your opinion of Metal Gear.
A few people on Twitter have just been like, what do you mean?
Because a lot of people love that game.
I despise that game. It's awful. You're an idiot.
Yeah. But would you say you're a fan of those sort of games?
I like action, third-person action games. I've got nothing against them. I just don't like Rising.
Well, that's a different subject. Yeah. I guess we've already covered that.
Many a time.
So I'll look forward...
I talk about that game as much as you talk about Sonic.
To and Shadow of the Damned. To playing more of Yaiba at some point in the near future. I'm going to be away this next week, so I won't have access to an Xbox. I mean, more likely to be playing PS3 if I do, at least if I play anything. Or perhaps some handheld titles, Vita or 3DS. I did pick up a couple of games for the Vita. I think it was directly after our podcast last week that I bought a Super Crate Box.
You did, yeah. Literally directly after.
Yeah, pretty certain of that. And it's a really addictive game, and it's incredibly hard to put down. It's very simple.
I killed my iPhone battery so many times playing that game, and on the Vita, it's just a dream to play.
Yeah, because what it is it's like, of course I can get more crates. I know I can do better next time.
Yeah.
And then you'll die, and it automatically, immediately restart.
Yeah.
It's like that Super Meat Boy thing. As soon as you die, it restarts. There's no faffing around. It's just constant, simple, enjoyable gameplay. A quick rush.
Good mindless fun.
But you've got to remember to turn it off. That's the problem with the game. You could sit there for a long time. So just restrain yourself. You know, maybe set yourself a goal. Once I've got 10 crates, I'll turn it off.
Maybe set an alarm.
That's what I was trying to do. I never got 10 crates.
Really?
I was playing for about half hours more.
I was trying to get there's 40 crates unlocks, like an extra hard mode. Yeah. I've forgotten the name of it. It's like SMBT mode or something like that. I tried to get it for so long and I got 36. So I haven't been able to get past that.
So what else? I picked up another game for the Vita. It was a TXK. I guess the spiritual successor to Tempest 2000, in the fact that it is basically Tempest 2000.
Yeah.
From LlamaSoft. And that was an offer in a PlayStation store, part of their spring sale. That's good arcade style fun. Are you familiar with the game?
I've never played Tempest. Like,
yeah.
It's something everyone keeps talking about. But like.
You know the concept? You know, you're a little kind of a spaceship and you're attached to a shape which you have to move around. It's very hard to describe, actually, and shoot things which are coming down certain pathways at you. Blast Process did a feature on it recently. Our good friend Neil was playing it. Actually, I say our good friend. You never met Neil, have
I've
you?
Never met him, no.
He's a nice guy. So I picked that up. And yes, other than that, Gears of War 2, Thursday night. With my
How'd
friend
you find
Gareth.
I was playing a game I'll talk about in a second, but you were saying you found it was a very visually arresting game.
Oh my gosh, I was amazed at the graphic fidelity of Gears of War 2. Do you like that?
I do. I like that. That's like a box quote.
Pretty game. It is. I know the series has been criticised for its colours being of the brown and grey variety.
Yes.
But the actual graphics themselves are off a very high standard. I think it's some of the best graphics I've ever seen on the 360.
I think so. I think it does push the 360 a lot. I mean, it's kind of that age-old thing of like Nintendo being able to get the best out of their hardware. I guess Microsoft Game Studios has been able to really push the 360 in positive ways.
And that's... it does try and shake it up with a few new ideas, but it's basically the same sort of thing.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah.
But yeah, it's enjoyable. And lastly, Rayman Origins.
Yeah.
I've been playing this game on the Wii.
You've Wii talked version. About it last week, right? You want to complete this before you touch Legends.
Yeah, and so that was my goal this weekend. In fact, it's the only game I've played this weekend. Origins is, I think I'd have to say one of my favourite games. It's superbly made.
It's a very good game.
It's beautiful to look at. It's flawless platforming gameplay. It is, there's a lot of gameplay in the game. Yes. I was thinking I'd finished it quite recently, but no, there's more.
Okay.
You know? And it's challenging to the point where it's not frustratingly difficult, but it is challenging. I like it an awful lot, and I can't sing its praises highly enough. I still haven't finished it. I've still got a couple of bosses to beat. It's got a great sense of humour as well, and I just think it's a fantastic game.
Ubisoft Montreal are very, very good at what they do, aren't they? I mean, Legends is as well a fantastic game. I'm really looking forward to playing Child of Light, their new game, which has kind of been dubbed as like a JRPG-esque adventure, which is coming out on the 30th of April, which I've already pre-ordered.
I often think that games developed by studios who aren't, say, Nintendo... You know, Nintendo is like, oh, like Mario's always great. Oh, Mario's perfect. You know, they'll give it reviews of like 9, 10 out of 10 and all that. I think Rayman Origins is deserving of the same sort of praise that Mario 3D World has had.
I think
and
so.
Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. This game is just as good, in my opinion, as either of those two titles.
Well, everyone said, didn't they, like definitive game for the Wii U. Like it really shows off what the console can do and it does it beautifully. And I mean... It doesn't hold your hand either, like it could be argued
now,
that... No, Rayman Legends.
Oh, Legends, that was from Origins.
Oh, sorry. I mean, both.
Both,
really.
Yes, I guess you can kind of lump them together because they're both of an extremely high standard and they're both 2D platform games.
Yeah.
Starring Rayman.
Yeah, well, like we talked about this yesterday, right? We were talking about Smash Brothers characters and who could be revealed, and you kind of said like, "Oh, Rayman could be in it," and then you were like, "Oh no, Rayman wouldn't be in it
because he's not considered the same caliber as."
But he should be.
He should be.
Yeah.
The quality of these games, the design of these games, is superb, and he deserves to be in there with the best of them.
I think
he's certainly had a lot better games than Sonic has recently.
Well, yeah, you know.
So. And I'm not shy of saying that. I think Sonic's a better character than Rayman, but...
I like Rayman. I think he's kind of cool. I think he's kind of quirky. I like the whole he hasn't really got limbs. He's just floating gloves and stuff. I like that about him. His hair's a bit, yeah, but apart from that, it's good.
Great. And that brings me to the end of what I've played. Wow, that was a marathon, wasn't it, that?
It was.
Whoa.
In contrast to you, I've not really been playing that much this month. I finally got our new iMac for the Tom and Matt Shack. So we will be engaging in video warfare again from this week going forward. I know you're in the UK, but I'll do maybe a few TMA quickies and stuff just to get the YouTube a bit updated. Maybe try and edit some of the other videos we started working on, like finally get the Sonic one up.
I was defeated trying to edit that.
You were defeated. It was a shame, but we'll eventually get it up now so you can see how terrible that game is.
Terrible is too harsh.
It's awful. It's a god-awful game.
It's bad in places, but
those places being the entire game, every level.
You've not played it all.
Oh, I've played bits. I've played enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Ninja Gaiden, Cyber...
Yaiba. It should be Zyber, shouldn't it?
It should be Zyber.
Why take that Z and move it to the front?
Exactly. Yaiba looked very entertaining, whereas I watch you play all of Sonic pretty much, and it just looks like so dull.
You missed the best bits.
The bits where I wasn't playing the game, yeah. They were very great times. I bought recently something I've been trying to get my hands on for a very, very long time. You also have this game, but not in the same version. You have the wonderful Wii U with its black casing and gold foiliness, Zelda-ness.
The special edition Wii U with Wind Waker built in.
Yes, I picked up... Sorry to fluff around there. I picked up the collector's edition of that. Finally, I've been this for ages. I wanted it since it was launched, and unfortunately it didn't come out in Denmark other than Elgiganten, I later found out, had this version, but Elgiganten didn't stock Wii U games at the time. Fortunately, I found it on a Danish website for 400 kroner. Which is very nice. So I now have the Ganon statue in our shelf of gaming memorabilia.
Yeah, I had to move Pikachu out of there. I thought that Ganon Well, Pikachu could sit on the bed, which is in our front room.
Yeah.
Ganon couldn't, so.
No, this is true. And he's next to the Ganondorf figure I bought in a flea market for 20 kroner from Ocarina of Time. It does, yeah. But it's a damn nice statue. I love that art style of that game, as I talked about earlier. Best cel shading for me in a game. Well, at least that style. I mean, yeah, but there's something completely different, which I agree with you on. But yeah, I finally have it. I'm looking forward to replaying that game. It is my favourite Zelda title, and I've seen you play it and gone, But I'm going to get into it. I'm trying to make a habit at the moment, and it means me limiting my purchases of completing the games that I've got, because I tend to buy a lot of games to talk about on this podcast, and then I never actually play the ones I have to completion.
Can we name some?
Lollipop Chainsaw.
Oh, shucks, I forgot about that.
God, I literally have a whole shelf full. Tales of the Abyss for 3DS. I didn't buy Professor Layton Phoenix Wright because of this very reason. I knew I wouldn't be able to pick it up. Bravely Defaults at the end of the game. South Park Stick of Truths at the end of the game. Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze at the end of the game, and I haven't completed them. Another game that I'd bought and not played is actually, subject of our A Link to the Past.
Oh, you've transitioned into that very well.
A Link to the Past. A Link to the Past writer, Kenzuka Tunabe, was also the director and level designer of 1987's Yumi Kugo Doki Doki Panic, which later becomes Super Mario Bros. 2 here in the West. Doki Doki Universe, however, which has nothing to do with Mario, was released in 2013 and developed by Human Nature, a studio headed up by Greg Johnson of Toe Jam and Earl fame. Toe Jam and Earl was originally released for the Mega Drive / Genesis, depending on your location, on March 12, 1992, on the same day as the Great Shump Biohazard Battle. Biohazard Battle is one of Sega's few horizontal shumps like Fantasy Zone, which despite being a Sega game, was ported to the NES by Sunsoft. This is of course not the first time Sega games would be released on the Nintendo hardware. The first of these later, after the perilous launch of the Dreamcast, was Choo Choo Rocket on the Game Boy Advance. Sega ported some other Dreamcast classics to the GameCube, including Phantasy Star Online and Skies of Arcadia.
And 18-wheeler Pro Truckers.
One of a handful of JRPGs on the system. One RPG series worth noting, however, is the Lost Kingdom series, as it marks the only Nintendo release of Bandai Namco's From Software, makers of the excellent Dark Souls 2.
Ooh.
Did you know that, Tom? That
yeah.
From Software made Lost Kingdoms?
Yeah.
Yeah, good boy. You worked in games retail. You get a gold star. Yeah, I played a bit of Dark Souls 2, and for my money so far, I played about an hour and a half of it. I've died 5 times, I think. First one after a very beautiful looking and dramatic opening sequence was I accidentally, while trying to figure out the controls, hit the shoulder button, smacked the woman with my sword, and then this maid woman went ballistic because I'd smacked the old fortune-telling woman who introduces the story, and then killed me. And I was like, ah, and a trophy popped called This is Dark Souls, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm playing this game now. So that happened. I went back in. I dealt with the maid woman. I went outside, fell off a cliff, respawned again, went back outside, roamed around a little bit, saw 3 little pigs, as was pointed out on Kotaku as one of the earliest jokes in a straw house, and hit one of the pigs by accident again, and got killed by 3 little pigs.
If you hadn't have hit the pigs, would they have been
so
violent?
No, I don't think so. I'm not a big bad wolf.
Is that the chickens in Zelda?
It was, and that's where I was kind of thinking that it was a bit like the chickens in Zelda once I hit the pigs. But yeah, they kicked my ass. Just because they were so low to the ground, and any time I was hitting them, I was only taking like 10 off them. I then had an explore of the scenery. I kind of went into the first dungeon-y bit. I killed a few soldiers and then got killed by a big badass soldier at the end of it, which was my own fault. I tried to use an item that restored all my health, but it made my character stop and drink it, and then this knight just like one hit killed me with a big cleave. And then the last time I died was what you saw when I kind of went down a different way, going, well, I can't kill that guy yet. I should probably try and get some other equipment. And then there was an even bigger knight, and I tried to roll to avoid him to run the hell away, and I rolled off the edge and drowned. So my experience of Dark Souls so far, kind of clueless as to what to do, died 5 times.
Mm.
There's a big statue in the middle of the town as well that tells you how many people have died on that version of the game, and it's over 100 million, and I laughed, and I turned the game off.
Will you ever go back to it?
I will go back to it. It's really fun. I don't see, like every other podcast and every news gaming website I've read, it's just been like, oh, it's the best game ever made. And it doesn't really seem to improve on the first one, other than visuals.
People are huge fans of that series, aren't they?
Yeah, and I don't think I've delved enough into any of them other than perhaps Demon's Souls, which is a whole another kettle of fish. That game is merciless in comparison to Dark Souls from what I played a bit. I look forward to going back. It does seem like a game that is really Moorish in its appeal, but not so much as the other title I picked up this week for the Xbox 360, Titanfall.
Matt's been playing an awful lot of Titanfall this weekend. I can testify to that.
I bought Titanfall Saturday morning. I played a little bit before we went out with friends for dinner yesterday, and then I've played it most of the day today. I've played like 6 hours of Titanfall already. Completed both of the Titanfall campaigns, both for the IMC and for the Frontier, the guerrilla fighter guys. And it's kind of interesting how it does it, because you play for like the guerrilla rebel guys first of all, and you do their story, and you're like, yeah, we're liberating the world. And then you play for the other people, the IFC. The IMC. And it kind of gives you a different perspective on the story. Admittedly, like, you kind of side with the rebels in the end anyway, because the IMC blokes are a bit of a jerk. But it's a really good game. Like, it's really fun. There is a character called Marcus Graves, who me and Tom both thought was voiced by Idris Elba, yeah. But it is a guy who was in adulthood who was doing his best Idris Elba impression.
But it's got to come from the idea.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, the character looks like a little like Idris Elba. And he's in the same role as Idris Elba.
He is very Pacific Rim.
Robots. What can I say?
It kind of carries on this whole trend at the moment of having like well-spoken English actors be your good guys and bad guys, both. And there's a South African guy who's the bad guy.
Yeah, he's going to go for interesting voices, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. But those are the things, I guess, that kind of set Respawn Entertainment's Titanfall apart for me, like from something like Call of Duty or Battlefield. Because we talked about in this podcast, like I've kind of gotten round to Battlefield 4 now. I'm kind of on board with it, but never as quickly as I was with Titanfall. Like, I prefer Titanfall over it leaps and bounds. It feels fresh. It's kind of combined some of the better bits of other games together. Like, as you were saying earlier with Super Crate Box, Tom, it's got this ability to kind of just jump back into gameplay. Yeah. Like, there's never a moment that's dull. It's very fast-paced. There is a whole parkour aspect of being able to run up walls, which feels a bit Mirror's Edge. But that's never forced on you. You don't have to do it. If anything, it makes the gameplay experience a little bit better. You can traverse the world in a very nice way. You're not just kind of limited to being able to what you can jump on. You can literally go anywhere in the map, and that's something very nice. If the scenery was destructible in something like Battlefield kind of context, you could blow things up, I would be even more on board.
Yeah, there's certainly room for a sequel to improve on the original.
I think so.
Yeah. I would suggest maybe putting creatures in it.
Yeah,
you said there was some.
There
sort
was
of
like a mission that was like called Dragon's Graveyard or something, and I remember talking to you that everyone had kind of it's called Here There Be Dragons on a map called Boneyard, and there's these like pterodactyl flying things, and people had seen them on the box and like in concept art and stuff, and people had said that maybe it was gonna go a bit Pacific Rim in its appeal of like giant robot militia fighting dragons.
It's already
and stuff.
Halfway there.
It is getting there. But to me, I kind of preferred the fast-paced, like, run-and-gun style of just being on the ground as a soldier. I let my Titan... You can either pilot your Titan and get kills in your giant mech, or you can let it roam free and get kills for you while you're running and gunning. And I prefer to do that. I let my Titan roam free because, for me, the favourite gaming experience of playing in a mech in a shooting game is Lost Planet. I know a lot of people like that game, but it's one of my personal favourites of the last gen. And so, like, the control of the Titan just kind of felt a bit cumbersome in comparison to the fast pace of being a pilot, as you're called, which is...
I guess that's the idea in a way, isn't it?
No, because, like, you can get faster frames, but then you get... you know, it's the kind of age-old, like, Street Fighter class thing where you can be a big hulking guy, but then you're really slow. Then the frame you start with is kind of a medium, and then there's one that's very fast that feels like the pilot, but it's got terrible armor, so you just die very quickly when you're in the Titan. Okay. But there are only three frames at the moment. Like, my only problem in the game is...
When you say frames...
That's what they call the variant of Titan. Like, the suit is called a frame, and then you kind of customize based on that with weapons and upgrades and perks, kind of like Call of Duty. There's not a lot of that. And other than, you know, doing the game's equivalent of prestiging at level 50, it doesn't seem to be a lot to make you want to come back once you've got all this kind of stuff. It is very fun, and, like, being able to pick up the game is a great experience. And one thing I will sing the game's praises of is kind of got the level of competitive play and the ability to just pick it up and play it down, nailed. I'm still playing after 6 hours with the first gun I started with because I still think it's the most efficient. Mm. And you can cater that gun to your style of play very, very easily. And it doesn't feel like if I go on this game in like 6 months, not knowing the maps and with my starter weapon, that I'm going to feel at a disadvantage. Like, if you're the first person to aim at someone and shoot them, they will die, regardless of what level they are, regardless of the prestige and know the map, like the back of their hand.
Mm.
There's no pay-to-win kind of thing that I feel is a little bit in Battlefield. There's no, I need to have played this game for 75 hours and learned every corner of this map feeling like there is in COD. Perhaps later on, there will be this kind of like, those who know the map will be a bit more dominant, but the weapons at least kind of even the playing field, which I very much like. They said that there's a campaign. It's not really, but I kind of like how it's done. I kind of prefer the campaign, in inverted commas, to the regular multiplayer.
It's a not very intrusive story, is it? It all plays out in these little windows in the top right of the screen, you know?
Pretty much. It's mostly audio. The campaign itself reminds me very much of the Spartan Ops, which is it's essentially the equivalent of, oh God, I've forgotten the name of it, in Halo Firefight, the Firefight version in Halo 4, where it's got the interlocking stories into Firefight.
Yeah, I'd rather just have Firefight.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me a bit of that. But they've taken it in a good direction because it's not taking away from what Firefight was. For this game's purposes anyway, this is a 6-on-6 combat game with the story interweaved in almost episodic content like Spartan Ops is.
Yeah.
But then it's taken some of the other quirky ideas. Like I said, I mentioned the wall running mechanics is kind of taken from Mirror's Edge. It's got the whole, at the end of the mission, you either win or lose, but it deals with it in a very Left 4 Dead style that once you've won, you have to stop everyone from escaping, but if you lose, you're going to got to run and gun your way to this helipad
to save
where
yourself.
Someone's going to pick you up to save yourself. It's very cool, and you get rewarded by XP for managing to escape, but obviously, if you're the victorious team who are not escaping, you can either kill all the people trying to escape and stop them escaping, or you can just blow up their ship, which takes a load of Titans, which seems really fun. But I honestly love it. I think it's a very good game. I highly recommend it. I was on the cusp of buying an Xbox One, kind of wanting to play it. But as I'd kind of long suspected, them keeping silent about the Xbox 360 version wasn't a sign of it being a terrible game. It was a sign of it being a very competent game. And I think, as here in Denmark, the prices of the Xbox 360 version being more expensive than the Xbox One version kind of shows that a lot of people are just going to buy it on the 360 and that it is kind of a last-gen game, even though they've hyped it up to be this whole next-gen experience. I think the first we're really going to see of something like that is probably Destiny by Bungie.
Yeah.
But
that
honestly,
it can't be done on the previous generation of Destiny.
The lazy comparison of this game that I've heard everyone throwing around is this is Assassin's Creed 1 compared to Assassin's Creed 2. Like, this is setting the groundwork. There's nice ideas. There's these things called burn cards.
But sometimes that's all you need.
Exactly. Well, it's a solid game, honestly. Yeah. It's a very good game. And I've heard people say, like, oh, it's not as good as COD. Oh, it's not as good. And you're an idiot if you think that. It's just a case of you getting used to something. But this is something fresh. This is pushing the genre a little bit further.
It's the right thing to do.
Though not as much as it probably could and not as much as the hype kind of dictated it would.
Hmm.
But it is a step in the right direction.
And for me, watching it as an onlooker, for anyone who's out there who's concerned about the graphics of the game, they look good.
They do.
You know, and it keeps the... I think they're toned down a little bit, But and they have this little, I describe it as a washed out look.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is all to help the game run as fast as possible.
Exactly.
And by no means it looks bad. No.
It does look like a very competent 360 game.
And really, they've prioritized the speed over, you know, the graphics, which is the right thing to do.
As
you know,
they
don't
should.
Try and make it look like the Xbox One version exactly, because it's not going to happen.
No.
But make sure it's the same game to play. And
it is.
That's the great thing about this version.
I've not played the Xbox One game, but I'm seeing frame-by-frame comparisons of it.
Yeah,
it looks
right. And if you can feel no flaws in the actual gameplay, if the gameplay feels right and works, then, you know, no horrible slowdown, no major graphical glitches to get in the way of you enjoying the game.
So honestly, if you like first-person shooters, I think you owe it to yourself to go out and get Titanfall. Don't be put off by the whole 6x6 thing, because there's a lot of AI running around the map. There's also Titans, so essentially it could be a 12x12 match because you've got you and your Titan AI controlled. But like I said, there's a lot of AI running around the map as well, who will kill you. Like, you, if you run into enough AI and there's like six of them, they can easily gun you down. Like, if you're very quick on the draw, you can deal with them quite easily. Mm. They're not a hindrance as much as a pilot, i.e. a regular player. Yeah. But damn, it's a fun game. I'm going to write a review for Blast Process now and finally put that infamous one up as well. I will do that after this podcast. Sorry about that.
Before we continue, shall we just skip the topic? Because I'm looking at the time now and we've got a lot of news.
Yeah, sure. Let's just jump into news.
Yeah.
And then we'll do the week ahead.
And then we'll do the week ahead.
Right.
So, any gaming news then, Thomas?
Well, Matthew, I've been having a look on the old computer here and I have, I've handpicked some news stories.
Sounds titillating.
These
Tell
are ones
me more.
That interested me particularly. So I'll just go ahead and talk about a guy who played a video game for 85 hours.
Interesting.
This was a record-breaking attempt. This fellow was playing Armor Attack, an arcade game from 1980. He beat the previous record of a guy playing Qbert for 84 hours, 48 minutes. This guy, what's his name? John Salter, has played Armor Attack for 85 hours and 16 minutes on a single credit. Now, that's the important point to note. This is without dying.
So, to a quarter to you Americans, he played it on, right?
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's pretty impressive. Wasn't there, like, a world record attack broken by a Dane?
There was,
like,
a
Swedish
couple of weeks back. Gentleman who was playing Missile Command.
Okay.
Victor Sandberg, he played that for 100 hours on a single credit. Well, he attempted. That was his goal. He only managed 71 hours, 41 minutes due to fatigue, which is fair enough. I can't imagine doing that, playing a game for that amount of time. Who in their right mind would play a game for over 85 hours?
I don't know. The story I was thinking of was back in March, a Danish man smashes Gyrus arcade world record, and it was beaten by a Danish arcade champ in 49 hours, which is Kim Kano Arm, Kobka? I'm not going to attempt it.
Okay.
But
apologies.
Yeah. So a lot of arcade records seem to be broken at the moment, and I just kind of look at the times, and I'm just like, you were a braver man than I. Like, can you imagine, like, what do you think, honestly?
How do
is
you
all...
eat?
I guess you just kind of get fed, like
a
child.
You get fed? Are you on some sort of, like, just force-fed into you through wires, you know, like a drip or something?
I don't think so. I don't think they've gone into that level of depth. I think it's just kind of
someone's
like
going to be handing you things, because this game apparently is played entirely with buttons and no joystick.
Okay.
So maybe you can play it one-handed.
Perhaps,
I'm thinking.
But, you know, if you're going for a world record attempt, I don't think you're going to be playing it one-handed. You're going to have someone sneaking you a cheeky Mars bar in the
survive
side.
Survive 85 hours, you've got to eat.
Well, like, he did quit due to fatigue, so maybe he didn't.
Well, that was the other guy.
Ah, that's true.
This guy, there's no mention of fatigue. This guy was probably, you know, kept going.
Having a laugh, yeah. Died, he's like,
he was wanting
to
go to bed, that was all, I imagine.
Perhaps, yeah.
Oh, I see that does some serious damage to his eyes.
Do you reckon he's got one of those big, you know, the hats with the drip? Like the straws going down, like you see at like American football games.
Oh, possibly.
Yeah.
He also racked up the score of 221. Oh my God, that's a lot. Hang on. that's 2,211,990.
Okay. Is that the world record
that
of this
game? That is the world record. Previously, the previous record was set in 1982.
Okay.
That was 2,009,000.
Okay. Any mention of the time that game was played for back in 1982?
No, not on this article. But I just found that interesting. I just couldn't do it. And I'm sure there's many other people who wouldn't dare attempt.
What was the longest you think you sat down and played a video game?
You know, we're talking about me.
I know, but like you personally, what was the longest you sat down and played a video game?
I imagine I've never gone beyond 4 hours.
Do you reckon?
Never. Never in my life. I can't even think about doing 4 hours now.
What game gripped you for 4 hours? That's what
I really don't know.
Really? You think?
4 hours is an exceptionally long time. I'd imagine it would be something like Pokemon.
Do you reckon? Oh, God, that's probably mine as well.
Yeah,
it probably explains why I have these glasses on my face.
I look at my time spent playing some Pokemon games, and, you know, these are a couple of hundred hours.
Actually, I know what my longest is. I racked up about 14 and a half hours, if not more, playing Legend of Zelda: A Link Between Worlds on Christmas Day.
14?
I completed it in one sitting. I did.
That's not very sociable, is it? Christmas Day?
There was no one in my house, so my family were coming the next day. It was just me, my mum and dad. So I just kind of got on with it.
And you didn't want anything to do with your parents on
Christmas
Day?
Well, no, I did chat with them on Christmas Day. I stayed up until like 6 a.m. in the morning. Like, I completed it mostly in the evening. It was after lunch and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think 4 hours is probably pushing it for me. I don't think I've even done that. Moving on.
Yeah, what else has happened?
There is a game that caught my attention. A trailer out there now for a game called Severed. It's by Drinkbox, who developed Guacamelee, great game in its own right. This thing looks beautiful. It's incredibly bright, vector graphics. It's to do with chopping ligaments off enemies.
Interesting.
And then transposing them onto your own body. That's the concept of the game. It's a gesture-based game coming to mobile platforms. So unfortunately, as I watched the trailer without reading that, and I'm thinking, this looks like a Vita game. I imagine it on the Vita's OLED screen, just looking fantastic. And it kind of disappointed me when I found out it was going to be on mobile devices.
I assume it will be. I mean, it could theoretically also be on the Wii U. I mean, the Wii U's got a touchscreen.
This is it. Drinkbox have stated that they're not ruling out the possibility of it being developed for a home console or a portable console.
That's cool.
The lead designer, Greg Leske, has been quoted as saying, "You upgrade parts offered by absorbing your enemy's body parts in a way similar to Mega Man."
Ah, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So you take the parts off other enemies and then you get their powers. Okay.
But I think it's hard to discuss this online without seeing it.
It's pretty much a lot of swipe gestures from what the trailer shows, right?
It's got a really pumping soundtrack as well.
It does have a really nice visual aesthetic as well. It reminds me of a PSP game that I can't remember the name of.
But I suggest now, if that sounds like something you're into, even if not, you should just check out the trailer, because it's called Severed and it looks great. It's coming out in 2015 for mobile devices. Okay, so we touched on it. Well, we've been talking about it on this show. That's Titanfall in some detail. Its first download content is called Expedition, and it's going to be three new maps and be available in May.
You know why I'm excited about this, Tom, other than my newfound love of Titanfall? It's free! It doesn't cost anything!
How about that?
I don't have to pay 349 fucking krona for maps like I did with Battlefield. Yay!
And it will take place after the multiplayer campaign.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what new things they bring into it. It looks to be set in some sort of jungle-like environment.
Yeah.
The name Expedition kind of gives me ideas. It's going to take Titanfall into new areas that aren't similar to the ones already in the game. It's great that it's getting some downloadable content.
Yeah, it does look pretty cool. The Vita game that the Drinkbox game reminds me of is Patapon. I just want to interject that.
Of course, Patapon. You mentioned it's free. In the article I read, it's talking about the season pass costing $25.
It does. However, they said at PAX that this first DLC would be free.
Oh, how nice.
Which I read on Kotaku. Yay!
Okay, So another mobile-based game which caught my attention was a game from Harmonix called Record Run.
Okay.
So this is another one of those endless runner type games.
Right.
Which, you do, that's nothing out of the ordinary. There's a million of them. What makes this game so special? Well, you can play it to the music on your mobile device. So if you've got, you know, on iTunes on there or whatever, you've got a lot of songs, you can play it along. And I think the beats, in a similar way to Vib Ribbon, kind of dictate the gameplay.
Yeah.
So to me, that sounded great because I love Vib Ribbon. And I think any game which gives you the freedom to enjoy it with your own music...
Well, that seems pretty cool.
It's fantastic. I'm someone who likes to play games on Xbox while listening to my CD collection.
Yeah.
That's on I've copied to my Xbox, playing Gears of War while listening to Stooges Search and Destroy. Oh, I said Gears of War. It was Halo.
Halo, yeah.
Halo. I actually played Gears listening to Bob Dylan.
Interesting.
Blowing in the Wind, which made it particularly poignant. But it looks like it could be great.
They seem to be working on some cool stuff over at Harmonix. That Fantasia Music Evolved actually looked pretty cool. Mm. The one they were working on with Disney Interactive, which isn't out yet. I also remember them, they're working on a first-person shooter, right? That I can't remember the name of. It. Essentially, Chroma is called. They released it on Steam Early Access a couple of weeks back. And essentially, the whole concept of it is there's music, there's like dubstep going on in the game, and depending on the rhythm of the game and when you fire, you kind of, if you fire in rhythm at people, like you do more damage and stuff. They seem to be doing some really cool stuff, you know?
I think games which use music in new and exciting ways always do excite me. So that's why, you know, I bring this one up. It's out in May.
Yeah.
And you can pick that up on Android and iOS.
Cool.
In other news, there's a new Civilization game coming out, a sci-fi one. I'm not someone who's particularly interested in the genre myself, but I did feel this was big enough news to mention because I know there are a lot of Civilization fans out there.
I do really like Civilization games, however, I'm just terrible at them. I've kind of had this talk with someone.
I don't play real-time strategy games at all, but it's Beyond Earth, and people are saying it's very much like a spiritual successor to a game called Alpha Centauri, which I'm again not familiar with, but it was a Civilization spin-off that was released in 1999. The game will be available, Beyond Earth, for PC, Mac and Linux.
Yeah.
And Civilization fans are getting excited about this game.
Well, I can imagine they would. I mean, you know, it kind of... I guess it would also bring in a lot of fans of other RTS games such as StarCraft and things, you know, people who like the sci-fi thing.
That's right.
A very popular franchise, you know, it's kind of well-renowned for being a very good RTS game.
Mm. But yeah, the reception to this announcement on the internet has been extremely positive. So real-time strategy fans, that's a great new game to look forward to.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is some fun news that caught my attention. The infamous Atari landfill will be dug up.
Yay!
And Microsoft have really got behind this.
Well, it's for
a promotional thing, I imagine.
No, it's for a documentary for the Xbox One's media content. So basically you'll be able to watch this is on an Xbox One until someone pirates it onto the internet the first day it comes out, which I'm looking forward to because we don't own an Xbox One. Hint, hint, Microsoft. But yeah, essentially what happened was New Mexico State had said, you can't dig up this landfill. The ground is contaminated. There's been like nuclear tests in the area in the past in the 1960s. Who knows what horrors lie under the soil? You can't dig it up. Naturally, they've made a documentary about this for the last 2 years. So without them digging up the site, it's kind of a pointless documentary, really, going like, wow, Atari may have buried all these terrible ET cartridges under the ground, and now we can't dig it up. Sorry. Like, it needs to be dug up because it's the end of the game, and it'll also kind of kill this terrible, terrible urban myth.
Yeah.
Except maybe if Microsoft's just bought all of the existing ET cartridges and they'll just push them in the ground and be like, look what we found.
Also Pac-Man.
Also, Pac-Man.
There was another game which was...
Oh, yeah. Well, it's just generally buried. All the terrible Atari ports of stuff, isn't it? Like, it was in the software crash in the 1980s.
But it's quite... The news story is also covered in the Angry Video Game Nerd movie.
Yes.
I mean, that's the premise of of that film.
Yeah.
So it's very, it seemed very current, this idea of digging up the landfill.
It is.
I think all gamers will be interested to know what does, if anything still does exist down there.
Yeah, well, apparently, like, Atari have kind of said, like, even if they did do anything like that, they would have just poured concrete in with it. So it'll probably just be a large concrete slab that they'll have to then dig into, and then you'll just have...
Maybe make some art
cartridge.
Out of it. Perhaps. There's a real opportunity to make some art of a load of discarded cartridges.
Do you think they're going to do like they do with like football pitches and stuff when they dig up the turf and then they put the turf in a display cabinet? It's like, own a piece of Old Trafford. It'll be like, own
oh,
a piece
be
of
selling
the Atari
bits.
Dig site. This could be an ET cartridge. It who knows?
It could happen. Interesting if any of the games are playable. But if you say they're encased in concrete, I doubt that very much. Okay, so my favourite news of the week was Nintendo's announcement of their new game, Tamagotchi Life.
Looks absolutely mental.
It does. So this is kind of like a Second Life type game, Animal Crossing esque. Obviously, you're going to make connections to Animal Crossing being a Nintendo franchise. But
I guess
it seems...
you can kind of throw a bit of The Sims in there too.
Yeah. Basically, you import your Mii characters to a community.
Yes.
You've got on the game there, and they interact with each other. They can even have relationships with each other, which is, you know, the Sims connections right there.
Yeah.
So these are all the Miis you've got on your 3DS or on your Wii U. You can transfer them over, and one of the most notable things in this game is that they have real speech, and you can create your character and decide what voice they have and change the tone and such, and also your personality of the character is always very unique.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it's just weird.
It does look absolutely insane, that All Hail the Virtual Boy thing. Mm. I was just like, what the hell is this? And like, I thought it looked insane when it was in Japanese.
Yeah.
I know I can understand what the hell is going on and like, the announcement video that Nintendo put together where it was all like Nintendo personality, Miyamoto and stuff. It just looks
Iwata and Reggie
bonkers.
And Miyamoto. It was, yeah. It looks great, and it's I wanna try it. It looks new and exciting enough, and it's kind of surprising how Nintendo had taken a real gamble on this and just going for a Western release.
I don't know, there's kind of two sides to this argument. I guess the niche games that have been released recently, like Bravely Default selling millions of copies, have kind of maybe given them an incentive to try some of these quirky Japanese games in the West. I would also perhaps, from a more cynical point of view, argue that this is a stopgap because they don't have any new games coming out on the 3DS, and so they need to get something out to say, hey, look at us, we're releasing 3DS games. Mm. But I'm excited for it either way. It's a game I never thought we'd get in a million years.
I think it was interesting how they advertised that you can have relationships with your favourite celebrities.
Yeah.
By making memes of them. It's actually in the trailer. They say, you know, go out with your favourite celebrity. So I think maybe there's a few kids, the younger generation, who are really going to get a buzz out of this. And
I'm just interested to see how long it takes you to make a Scarlett Johansson meme.
Yes. Yes,
meme. If anyone wants to make a Tom Scarlett Johansson meme, please send it into us on our Twitter.
For those unaware, I'm a fan of the good lady. I enjoy her work.
You do? Yes, big fan.
Yep. My body is ready, as quoted by Reggie in the video. We asked some people on the street what they think of Tamagotchi Life, and Reggie supplied, my body is ready.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a very intriguing game coming from Nintendo.
Is there a release date for it?
When's it coming out? Yeah, 6th of June.
Is it a retail release?
That's, yes. States.
Sweet.
I think 6th of June. I don't know if it's a worldwide release.
If it's only States, I can import it and then we can see.
Mm. Yeah, but it looks fun. So I look forward to that one. In other news, there was another Nintendo Direct this last week concerning just Smash Brothers.
Yeah, it was a whole 38 minutes, right?
Yeah, gee, I kind of skipped through it, but I got the main points. They talked about some of the differences between the 3DS version and the Wii U version. Biggest news being the 3DS will be out before the Wii U version.
Yes.
In the summertime, and we'll get the Wii U one at Christmas time. What do you think about that? not releasing another big Nintendo game until Christmas.
Well, you know, otherwise if they release it in summer, it's going to be like Mario Kart, Super Smash Brothers. What the shit do we release at Christmas?
Yeah. And that just says they've got nothing else for Christmas, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I do look forward to what they will unveil in their E3 Nintendo Direct.
Yeah,
What's on the cards for the Wii U? It'd be exciting to see.
I don't know. Like, I'm honestly very reluctant to say, like, oh, I'm sure they'll pull it out of the bag, because I don't know if they can.
They seem to not have been making big announcements, but the announcements they've made... You know, I should say a lot of games. They've not been announcing a lot of games, but the games they have announced are, you know, games that everyone's getting really excited about. Mario Kart and Smash Brothers. And now even Tomodachi Life, you know.
Yeah, but like, you know, when they're releasing Game Boy Advance games on the Wii U.
And
you
know, then you see on the menu of the Wii U on the Plaza screen that the amount of people playing the Advance games.
Yeah.
is immense. You know, more people are playing advanced games than they're playing their full retail price games.
Surely that is worrying. Or maybe, you know, like...
It seems to change. Mario 3D World seems to be there, you know, nearly every week when I'm playing on the Wii U. And then the latest Lego games will always appear.
Yeah.
For example, Lego Movie still being played by a large number of people, and now Lego Hobbit. Other than that, though, Nintendo's downloadable titles that have been catching people's attention. Yeah. They're old classic games.
Indeed. And that kind of says it all for me.
Hmm. Well, I'm still holding out for an announcement of a new Zelda game at E3. I'd be very surprised if that didn't come out of the bag. Because we know they're working on one.
It's got to be, right?
But like, at least, I mean, why, even if it's not coming out soon, which it probably isn't, just show it and get people excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
Indeed.
That is all of my news.
Yeah.
Enjoy that.
I did. Quickly, to wrap up then, what's coming out in the week ahead?
So, not a lot really, to be honest. The one I'm most excited about is the PS3 release of JoJo Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle on the 25th of April.
You played the demo of this week. What did you think?
I thought it was really nice. Maybe this is the best cel shading I've seen in a game.
Do you reckon? You're taking it back already.
And it played well. It wasn't too far out of a fighter. The original JoJo Bizarre Adventure wasn't strictly a 2D one-on-one fighter. But it was very... I didn't get to grips with it. I didn't really like it. This is more traditional, but very weird. I'm not too familiar with the characters or such, but I just, it played well, so I think I'll probably pick that up. Coming a bit before that, say that's the 25th of April, another PS3 release coming out soon on the 18th is Short Piece Ranko
The Bandai
Longest
Namco
Day.
Game. Yes.
Longest Day, it's called. And this is a very interesting idea. They're releasing, I think, three movies and a game together in one package. And a couple of the movies are directed by Katsuhiro... Atomo, who is responsible for creating Akira and Steam Boy, among others. I'm not sure how long the films are or how they all connect to the game, which seems to be a side-scrolling action game.
Yes.
Very anime stylized. I'm intrigued with this one. I'm actually thinking of picking it up.
I think if you don't, I definitely am going to. It looks very interesting.
Because why not? It's like £40. You get three movies and a game.
Yes.
Doesn't seem too bad.
Actually, five movies and game.
Five.
According to Amazon.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. So it's available for pre-order now.
It is.
Maybe one for you anime fans to pick up. FIFA World Cup's coming out.
Yeah, well, the World Cup is almost upon us.
Within the next week, that's on all platforms. Great. Trials Fusion will be released on the Xbox One and PS4 within the next week, I think.
Yeah, it will be indeed.
Also, Final Fantasy 14 for the PS4 will get a retail release.
It will. I may pick it up. I'm not too sure yet. I kind of, like as I said, I don't want to really invest in many more games, especially when I've got so many left to play, especially when as time-consuming as Final Fantasy 14 will be.
So aren't you playing it on the PS4 anyway?
I played it on the Vita, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you only played the Vita?
Yes, I didn't buy the game officially.
No, but you have the game on the PS3.
I have the game on the PS3, yeah, which I can upgrade for, I think it's like 75 krona, so I'll probably do that.
I see. Another game coming out, Child of Light. I think that's on the 20th of April. Child of Light.
30th. I will 30th. Be picking it up. It's the same game I was mentioning earlier in the podcast by Ubisoft Montreal.
Yeah, I thought it was the 20th.
No, it's the end of the month.
Oh, right, okay. That's a shame. That's pretty much everything. Yeah, I don't think we've got anything else coming out. So more coming out in May.
There will be, and we'll talk about that
such
then.
Such as Mario Kart, but we'll keep you filled in regards to that in the coming weeks.
Indeed. Yeah, I guess that brings us to the end of this podcast then.
Yeah.
It's a fun one.
Thank you for joining us.
A lot going on.
A lot of information.
We didn't have a topic this week because we thought it would go on too long as it was, but next week we'll be... Well, not next week, actually. Next week, there'll be a great interview with our friends at Napnock Games, Copenhagen-based developer. I'll be talking to the studio's CEO and producer, Diana Dimovska, about generally how Napnock came into being, the Copenhagen Game Collective, and such titles that they've worked on, like Button and Darkroom Sex Game. Sounds intriguing, doesn't it? You'll hear out next week on Tom and Matt Attack.
And when I'm back, I probably won't cough.
You won't cough off.
I apologise for that.
It's all right. As usual, guys, please, please, please go to our iTunes and give us a rate and subscribe. Actually, if you've joined this podcast from listening to us on this week's episode of a Retro Asylum podcast, then welcome. I hope you've enjoyed this as much as our feature on that great podcast. If you haven't, check it out. Me and Tom are pretty much kind of doing a backstory, which I guess is almost relevant on our 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, we talk about how we got into video games. Trip down memory lane for us in our video game obsession.
It is. Skip down memory lane with us on the newest episode of Retro Asylum Podcast. Other than that, find us on Twitter at TMAcast. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom and Matt Attack. And until next time, guys, game on.
Game on.